Turin in Italy is famous worldwide for two things, fast cars and a religious relic. Now it's going to be home to the 2006 Winter Olympics. The games kick off in a giant ceremony on Friday night, featuring the decidedly unathletic tenor Luciano Pavarotti. There will be an enormous amount to watch. NBC's coverage will sprawl across many different channels. The network plans 418 hours of coverage. Many will watch controversial alpine skier Bode Miller, who hopes to lead the U.S. men's alpine skiing team to victory. And you'd have to be somewhat soulless not to root at least a smidge for Michelle Kwan's quest for gold in women's figure skating. The U.S. seems poised to pile up medals in speed skating. Veteran short track idol Apollo Ono and Texas newcomer Chad Hedrick are among the favorites. And although no American has ever won a medal in biathlon, Jay Hockenin hopes to ski and shoot his way to the medal stand. And this year, for the first time ever, an American team has a real chance to medal in curling. Cassie and Jamie Johnson, the skip and vice skip, respectively, of the U.S. women's curling team, are fourth-generation curlers from Bemidji, Minnesota. On the men's team, Scott Baird, the oldest U.S. Winter Olympian in history, also hails from Bemidji, the unofficial U.S. capital of the sport. We're going to talk to Bemidji later in the program to try to get the secrets of raising Olympic curlers. Later in the program, we'll also look at incitement. When does speech cross the line and become a criminal activity? But first, the Winter Olympics. What are you going to be watching this year? Snowboarding, luge, bobsledder, skeleton. What are the agonies and ecstasies you want to see in Turin? If you have questions for NPR sports correspondent Tom Goldman about the figure skating scoring system or doping test, let us know. 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And that new email address is talk@npr.org. And we will begin indeed with Tom Goldman, NPR sports correspondent, who joins us from our facilities at the Winter Olympics. Tom, good to have you on the program as always.
Buonasera, Neil.
The last time we spoke, Tom, we were of some confusion. Are you reporting on the games in Turin or Torino?
I am most definitely reporting on the games in Turin, Italy. Now, NBC is reporting on the games in Torino. But we're both in the same city. It's just a little difference of opinion. NBC, I believe, you know, it's a nod to local traditions, custom, and so on. They want to have the way Italians pronounce it. But most media organizations are, in fact, going with Turin. Not Turin, Turin.
And most media organizations change planes in Rome as opposed to Roma.
Exactly. And I was also reporting on the Olympics in Athens and not Athenia.
Well, anyway, looking at whatever it's called, Turin or Torino, there's no snow in Turin or Torino.
Well, there's no snow down here. There's snow where they need it, up in the mountains. And I was just actually up there today. And it took me 2.5 hours to get there and 2.5 hours to come back. It's a long way away. But that's where all of the skiing events are, and so they need snow on the ground. Now, it has been unseasonably warm, and there was a lot of patchy ground that you could see. But, you know, it's like all of the concerns pre-Olympics, no snow, there are journalists running around in Turin looking frantic because nothing's working electronically. Things usually work out. Reporters get their computers plugged in and they get online and the snow ultimately falls. So I don't think there's great, you know, concern about this not happening.
And it's not just the skiing that's at some distance from the city itself.
No, you have the sliding sports, luge and skeleton. You have the snowboarding is up there. You have ski jumping. I actually stopped by on my trip back from the mountain and saw the ski jump ramps waiting there silently. It's quite an impressive sight. Just you know, to imagine these guys you know, sliding down there and just launching into midair. It's one of the crazy sports of the Winter Olympics, which really is. I mean, that's the appeal. A lot of these sports, not a lot of Americans do, but I think the thrill factor is greater than in the Summer Games, and you've got a lot of thrill seekers here. Definitely so. Some would call them insane.
Yeah. If you've never been to the top of a ski jump in real life, believe me, I never went down the jump. I walked back down because TV, short, flat, that's not a slope. That's a cliff, Tom.
Yeah, it's an absolute cliff. And I think it was in Nagano, the 1998 Winter Games, when I positioned myself at the bottom of, I think it was the Large Hill. They have a Large Hill and a Normal Hill. The Large Hill is for the really insane jumpers. The Normal Hill is for the less insane. And watching these guys coming down there, you can't snowplow. You put your skis in the tracks, the two tracks, and you, at the top, I don't know what you say, but you just say, you just go, and then launch yourself into midair. And it's pretty astounding.
And it's important to launch yourself, of course, because one of the worst things you want to do is end up short.
Well, certainly, we all remember, well, some of us remember the old Wide World of Sports footage. You know, matter of fact, I was talking to a friend recently. He says, that's the only reason I'm going to watch the ski jumping is because I want to see one of those Wide World of Sports wipeouts. Remember that at the beginning, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, when that ski jumper kind of left the tracks and went off the side of the hill of the ski jump itself.
And left no one to doubt what in any way whatsoever that agony was involved.
That's right.
Let's talk about some of the issues that have come up. And again, and it happens with every Olympic Games, it seems, doping has been an issue.
Oh, yeah, you can't get away from it. I mean, the games keep getting bigger and bigger, and there's more countries pay their gold medalists more and more, and silver medalists and bronze medalists, but the gold medalists make the most, pay them more and more, and there's more prestige and endorsement. So, of course, there's going to be more doping. And the interesting, in the run-up to these games, what's been interesting, the Italian government has been in a battle with the International Olympic Committee over how strongly the Italian doping laws will be enforced. The Italian doping laws are draconian. If you're caught sports doping, you face the possibility of criminal prosecution and jail, although rarely that's happened, but you do face this possibility. Of course, the IOC that wants to put on a beautiful show is envisioning the Carabinieri, the Italian police squads, sirens blaring, pulling up in the athletes' village and carting off athletes in handcuffs. And so they've been haggling over what to do. And just this week, they reached what they're calling a compromise, in that the IOC will be able to do the actual drug testing. The Italians said they had wanted to do that as well. And there are going to be probably about 1,200 random and in-competition tests at the games. The other part of this so-called compromise is you won't see these police raids on the athletes' village, but athletes who do test positive for illegal drugs will face possible criminal proceedings in court.
And bring us up to date, if you will, on the Prince of Propecia, Zach Lund, who was banned and then unbanned and could end up banned again.
Oh, boy, poor Zach Lund. You know, I just have to say, whether he's innocent or guilty, and a lot of people I've talked to have said that there's no way this guy was doping, but a substance in the hair restoration medication he was using is on the banned list as of just the last year. But regardless of how this comes out, I have to give him points for acknowledging in an interview I did with him recently that his hair has always been his greatest insecurity, and men with hair loss know all about that. I mean, he said in high school he was known as the guy with the mullet, and, you know, he's just always struggled with his hair. And then when he started losing it, he started using hair restoration medication. And this thing that he's tried to hide from everyone is now international news, and he kind of chuckled about that. That was a couple of weeks ago. He's not chuckling now because he faces the possibility that he may not be able to compete. The U.S. Anti-Doping Agency overturned his suspension and basically exonerated Zach Lund, said it was an honest mistake. He didn't know that the substance in his hair restoration medication was on the banned list. But the World Anti-Doping Agency has appealed the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency decision, and they're taking it before what's called the Court of Arbitration for Sport, kind of like a Supreme Court for sports. They're doing that tomorrow in Turin. They expect a decision probably on Friday whether Zach Lund will be in or out of the games.
Let's get some listeners involved. What are you going to be watching out for this year in the Winter Olympic Games? 800-989-8255 or email us talk@npr.org. And let's start with Peter. Peter calling us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes, hi.
Hi. Everybody in Phoenix, of course, has been practicing their lures, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll be watching the men's halfpipe event. My nephew, Mason Aguirre, is on the men's Olympic team. He just turned 18. He's the youngest member on that men's team.
And have you watched half pipe before your nephew adopted it as his sport?
Very little. And he's been a professional for in the men's pro circuit for 4 years since he was 14. And this year has been his best year. He's taken two silver medals behind Sean White in two of the Chevy Grand Prix, and he took the silver at the X Games behind Sean White. So he's right behind Sean White. He's very hot right now.
And Sean White, for those who don't know, I guess, is the Tiger Woods of halfpipe.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Tom Goldman, what chance is Peter's nephew given, according to the experts?
Well, according to the experts, whoever those people are, sure, he's given a chance. But Sean White is, and we should also say he's nicknamed the Flying Tomato, one of the many athletes here with colorful names because he's got this long, flowing red hair. It has just been fantastic in the half pipe. I mean, he's an X Games legend, and you know, he's won a couple of gold medals there, and he appears unbeatable. But you know what? That's why they hold the competitions, because someone can always, like Peter's nephew, could always, you know, best the Flying Tomato.
Hmm. So you're going to be watching a lot of the games, Peter?
Oh, yes, I will. It should be. We got some great athletes going this year, and so yeah, it should be very, very exciting.
Well, good luck to you and to your nephew as well.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Peter calling us from Phoenix, Arizona. We're going to take a short break if you'd like to join us. We're doing our Winter Olympic Games preview, and our guest is NPR's sports correspondent Tom Goldman, who's with us from our facility at the Winter Olympic Games. 800-989-8255. Tell us what you're going to be watching or zap us an email, talk@npr.org. We'll be back after the break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The Winter Olympic Games kick off on Friday. We're giving you a preview. How else will you sort through 418 hours of coverage and complicated scoring algorithms? Let us know what you're keeping an eye on besides, of course, the Flying Tomato. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. Tom Goldman, NPR sports correspondent, is with us from our facility at the Winter Olympic Games. And let's get another caller on the line. This is John. John calling from Saratoga in California.
Hey, Neil. How are you?
I'm good.
Great, great topic. I guess the most interesting thing that I'm going to be looking for specifically is around Apollo Ohno and the skating from the last Olympics, where you had the incident with the Koreans, and then obviously after the Olympics, that traversed into the World Cup when there was the game with the U.S. against the Koreans and there was mocking going on. I'm just going to be interested to see how, you know, if there's any you know, focus or turbulence that gets built through that as a nice competitive you know, candle to light the fire of good competition for the game.
Tom Goldman, is there going to be blood on the short track speed skating circuit?
Well, there's blood already because it's a pretty tough sport. But, yeah, I mean, John raises a good point. I'd also like to point out that John's from California and Peter's from Phoenix. We've got an all warm climate caller so far. That's interesting. But, yes, short men's 1,500-meter short track speed skating this weekend is one of the first weekend highlights, I would say, along with the men's downhill and luge and a couple of others, men's luge. As John points out, major controversy 4 years ago at the Salt Lake City Games, a South Korean skater was disqualified for blocking in this tightly packed event that people often describe it as roller derby on ice. And the disqualification gave Apollo Anton Ohno the gold medal. And the South Koreans were outraged, so much so that Ohno got death threats. It forced him to withdraw from a World Cup event in South Korea in 2003. And so, yeah, for the South Koreans, certainly Sunday's 1,500 meters is payback time.
Yeah, and if, Neil, if I could just add one more comment, that what I was referring to is the actual soccer World Cup when the U.S. played Korea. There was even mocking going on the sidelines there. They were, you know, mock skating, trying to kind of rub a little bit of dirt in the face. So it even traversed into a different sport, so it took it to a whole new level. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
All right, John, thanks very much.
Thanks.
Yeah. It Neil, it points up an interesting thing. I mean, there's always this. I mean, the Olympics is fueled by nationalism, and mostly it's amicable nationalism. People love to wave their country's flags and root for their own teams. But you know, sometimes it does spill over into some genuinely nasty feelings. And I think you have that. Probably not with the athletes themselves. I think the South Korean who was disqualified has said, you know, he harbors no grudges. But but you know, the people who root. The people who get very passionate seem to, in this case, get overly passionate.
Well, this time, this year, the U.S. women's curling team looks like it has a good shot at a medal. Many of the competitors on both the men's and women's teams hail from northern Minnesota and from specifically Bemidji, Minnesota. Joining us now to tell us a little bit about curling and why Bemidji has been home to so many national and world champions is Ruth Howe, a former physical education teacher at Bemidji State University who wrote a dissertation on curling. She's with us by phone from where else? Bemidji, nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you.
So how's the town feeling about now? Pretty proud?
Very proud. You couldn't ask for it. You know, it's so rare to have two teams come from the same curling club.
And you should say that the two sisters are indeed the skip and vice skip on the women's team.
Yes, they are the Johnson girls.
And just explain to us for a moment, what does a skip do?
The skip calls the shots to be made. In other words, they determine the ice conditions,
mm-hmm.
the weight that they want the individual to shoot. And it really looks kind of dumb, except that it takes a lot of skill and strategy in order to do this, because the ice conditions constantly change.
Mm-hmm. And that is why also you have these people out in front of this sliding 41-pound stone with brooms.
That's right. They're responsible for getting the rock the distance that required to make the shot.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the skip determines the sideways deviance in terms of the rock.
Left and right, and the sweepers control how far it goes.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, I understand that there in Bemidji, you could be on the high school curling team.
Yes, they have classes that are in the high school, yes, and they're elective. But they also have, like, Sunday curling for youngsters, and they have a community ed, and they have even a college education class. Community ed also is included in that. So there's a lot of curling.
And other than the fact that you've probably got a fair amount of ice in Bemidji, Minnesota most years, why has this town, do you think, become the American center for curling?
Well, I think it's a family affair. And we're located so that we can have competition with Canada. Winnipeg is 4 hours away. Duluth is about 3 hours away, and North Dakota, and they're about 2 hours away. So the opportunity to compete is here.
Mm. Let's get a listener on the line. This is Phyllis. Phyllis calling us from Rochester, New York.
Hi. All of us in Rochester at the Rochester Curling Club will be watching the Olympics this year, and all tuned into curling.
So we shouldn't leave out Northern New York State when we mention homes of American curling.
That's true, and we're hosting the U.S. Women's Curling Association National Bond Spiel here in Rochester, and the play starts tomorrow morning.
And what was that word you used?
Which word?
The National
Bond Spiel. It's the United States Women's National Curling.
Mm-hmm. But Bond Spiel?
Bond Spiel.
Yeah.
It's the word for tournament.
Ah.
Sorry.
A word with which I am unfamiliar.
There's a lot of vocabulary that's very specific to the sport.
Such as?
Hogline.
Pardon?
Hogline?
The hogline.
Yeah, what's a hogline?
That's the equivalent of a foul line.
Aha, okay.
It's a black line. You want to get your stone over it towards the house, which is the target. So if you don't cross the hogline at our club, you have to put a quarter in the pig's bank.
Well, what's it with where you are, Ruth Howe?
We don't. Well, the hog line definitely is a term for curlers, but we don't have any payment in terms of if you cross the hog line.
This is if you don't cross it. It's your penalty fee.
I was speaking this past weekend with some people in north central Wisconsin, where they apparently do some curling as well. And one of the things that a parent of a curler told me was that the first thing they do teach young curlers is sportsmanship. If, for example, your opponent makes a bad throw, you don't boo.
That's true. Curling is very high in terms of courtesies. For one thing, you know, you always shake hands before you start in, and you always shake hands when you finish. And you always stand to the side of the line, and you give every opportunity for the curler to make his or her shots. You're always thinking in terms of letting them make their shots so you can make yours. It's just a way of thinking.
Yeah, and you're always you always have a compliment even for an opponent who's
that's right.
They've outscored
right.
you. But the etiquette is a great reason why it's such a good family sport. And my daughter, my husband, and I all curl.
Well, Phyllis, we wish you good luck with what we will continue to insist on calling a tournament.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, please keep covering curling.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And Ruth Howe, I'm sure you're going to be home watching the curling events in the Olympics.
Yes, even when those had come on at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Ruth Howe, a former physical education teacher at Bemidji State University who wrote a dissertation on curling, and she joined us from her home in Bemidji, Minnesota. And Tom Goldman, some of these events happening on European time are going to be, well, not happening necessarily at awkward times, but broadcast at some awkward times.
Yeah, not a real surprise there. I mean, curling, sadly, has been the butt of jokes for many Olympics, and probably will get plopped in the middle of the morning, as you say. Mm-hmm. And it'd be interesting to see if finally people like Jay Leno and David Letterman let up on curling during these Olympics, or if they'll have at it again.
Let's talk now with Todd. Todd calling from Salt Lake City.
Yeah, my question is for Tom, and I'd like to know what he thinks of the chances of Bodie Miller being able to win the downhill. And I'd also like to know what the differences you believe are in the course from the Salt Lake City downhill and the Torino or Turin downhill.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, special recognition to Todd for finally bringing up the name Bodie Miller. We've been on almost a half hour, and it's the first mention, if you can believe it. And I should just say, before I try to answer it, this is my seventh Olympics, and I can't remember one person being mentioned so much above everyone else. There are 2,500 athletes here from 85 nations, and it's really like Bodie Miller and 2,499 other athletes. It's pretty remarkable. I won't handicap it because I'm not in the business of picking. I mean, certainly he's entered in all five Alpine events, and he's got a shot. I think what a lot of people are looking at is how has he maybe recovered is too strong a term, but there's been so much controversy in the last month. People have forgotten what a remarkable skier he is. And, Bodie opening his mouth a lot and reporters being there to record it and then him having to make apologies. And he's kind of gotten away from skiing. He took a golf break recently and came back and says he's refreshed. And there's great anticipation to see how he does Sunday in the first event. I will have to pass on the other question because I really don't remember the layout. I didn't cover the downhill in Salt Lake City, so I'm not sure how they compare. I know that they talk about this one being being a tough one, and but I assume Salt Lake City was as well.
Todd, thanks very much.
The only other question I had was I wanted to know if the defending gold medal champion, Fritz Strobel, if he was still running from the Austrian team. I've been unable to access that information.
We hear a lot about Hermann Mayer, but not about Tim.
Fritz Strobel.
Yeah, right. That's a good question, Todd. I haven't seen the starting list yet. I thought I had heard that Strobel, he's been competing on during the World Cup season. Mm-hmm. But you raise a good point about the Austrians. Not only Mayer, who is trying to reassert his great name, but you've got Benjamin Reich, who is leading in the World Cup standings, and Michael let me get the pronunciation here correct, Valhofer, who is supposed to do well in the speed events, the downhill and super G. It just points out what everyone is anticipating is this great U.S.-Austrian rivalry in the men's alpine events. The Austrians haven't had rivals for a long time, but the Americans, not certainly not just with Bodie Miller, with Darren Rawls in the downhill and Todd Ligety in the slalom, a strong men's team, strong women's team, but particularly in the men, the competition with the Austrians should be quite interesting.
Todd, thanks very much for the call.
Appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye. We're talking with NPR sports correspondent Tom Goldman, who's at NPR's facility covering the Winter Olympic Games, which, of course, get underway on Friday. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Amber on the line. Amber is calling us from Laramie, Wyoming.
Yeah. We're real excited here. I know the Bemidji folks are rooting for their own, and so we are here, too. We have a Laramie athlete, Sarah Conrad, who is going to compete. She's the first woman to ever be on two teams in the same Olympics. She's competing in biathlon and Nordic cross-country skiing. And she also has the distinction of being the oldest female competitor at the daughtering age of 38. And I've tried biathlon myself. That's skiing and shooting. And it's incredibly difficult just to hit the little targets. And then you add a little ski trip to that, so you come in all hot and bothered, and then you have to settle down and shoot a target. So
yeah, hitting the target is hard enough. Hitting the target after, as you say, coming in with your heart pumping and everything, all the excitement, that's hard.
Very hard.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I guess it's a very popular sport,
mm-hmm.
But most people here don't
follow it
know that much about it.
Yeah. Tom?
That's one of the names we should watch out for during these games. Speaking of biathlon, and I also have tried it like Amber before the 2002 games, and I concur with everything both of you have said. Very difficult, and to hit that target with your chest thumping. But a person we should look out for is Ole Einar Bjørndalen of Norway. Certainly not a name that rolls off the tongue.
I was
going
to say easy
Americans.
For you to say, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But this guy is a biathlon medals machine. He's one of only three Winter Olympic athletes to win four golds in one Olympics. He did that in Salt Lake City, and he's trying to sweep all five biathlon events. So he's doing something right, and people will hear of this guy.
Amber, thanks very much for the call, and get some sleep.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Let's go to Beth, and Beth is with us from Holly in Michigan.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
I'm calling to tell you I'd like to see Jenny Rodriguez pull out a gold medal this year in the long track speed skating.
Mm-hmm. Why does that sport interest you?
Well, actually, it's amazing the amount of crossover athletes that are coming out of the roller speed skating. That's where Derek mm-hmm. Parra came from, Chad Hedrick, Jenny Rodriguez, Casey Boutier, all of them. And they've just overpowered the skaters that were there before them.
Tom, go ahead.
No, it's a very interesting point that Beth raises. I talked to some of the people who were in the early days of the crossover from inline skating to speed skating, and said that your tradition, the speed skaters, excuse me, who were the big names at the time, including Bonnie Blair and others, kind of chafed at this. They thought these people were kind of pretenders and so on, and the early ones had a tough time, but now. Now, as Beth pointed out, these people are just rolling in and hardly having any trouble with the transition and becoming medal favorites and winning medals. And the speed skating team this year is loaded, and you can expect probably a lot of really good performances out of the U.S. speed skaters.
This youngster, Chad Hedrick from Texas, I think he's entered in all five events. And of course, as soon as you say that, everybody remembers Eric Heiden in 1980 in Lake Placid. Is he given a good shot, at any kind of a shot at five medals, do you think, Tom?
Boy, I don't know. You know, it's always so difficult to do that when you say you're doing all of them. Whether he could do all five, I don't know. I don't think so. It's very tough. I mean, he's got tremendous competition even on his own team with skaters like Shawnee Davis and Joey Cheek, not just international competition. So very difficult for anyone to do that. You know, everyone's thinking
Bodie
Miller's. I know he's
done it on the roller speed skating portion of it. At the World Championships, he's won them all, every distance, long, short, you name it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Beth, do you? I gather you inline skate. Do you go out on the ice as well?
You know, I gave it a whirl once. It was quite fun, a little scary. The corners and the padding you run into, but it was a great time, and I tell you what, I wish those guys all the luck in the world and maybe give some recognition back to the inline speed skaters and see if we can't get that to be a summer Olympic event.
Beth, thanks very much for the call, and good
Thank
luck.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to hear more of your calls about what you hope to see, what you're interested in watching at the Winter Olympic Games when they get underway on Friday night. We're also going to be talking about the sentencing of a Muslim in London, Abu Hamza al-Masri, and the fine line between free speech and incitement. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Wanted to read a couple of the emails that we've gotten over the past few minutes. Ken Nottingham in Anderson, Indiana writes, hello, I'm a retired janitor, so it's natural. I'm a curling fan. It's the only sport where a guy with a broom can be a hero. And this from Patrick Carnahan in Anchorage, Alaska. When I'm not out skiing, I'll be watching all 11 Alaskan athletes in cross-country skiing, biathlon, snowboarding, ski jumping, men's and women's hockey, and curling. We're particularly proud of our athletes because with a small community here, the probability that you know or have run into these people is very high. Does Alaska really have the highest per capita number of athletes in these games? That's a question we're going to leave strictly rhetorical because I don't think Tom Goldman knows the answer to it.
I know they've got a lot, definitely. A lot. And I've been talking to a reporter, I think, who either had a piece on or is going to have a piece on our air about that. But I think there's a good chance. I mean, not a tremendous amount of people up there, but they've got a lot of Winter Olympians here.
Let's get another caller on the line. Rhea is with us from Cincinnati.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to kind of get a feedback about how the Finns would be doing, especially on a ski jump and hockey and cross-country skiing.
And am I detecting a Finnish accent?
Yes, you are.
Okay. Tom, any idea how the Finns are likely to do? And, well, ski jumping is just about their national sport.
It certainly is, and I'm actually planning to go up, Wednesday, on Friday, to meet one of their top ski jumpers, Janne Ahonen. One of the many, of Finnish ski jumpers, as you say, Neil, it is almost a national sport there. So I think there's a very good chance that the Finns will do very well there. I'm afraid I don't know much about on the cross country. And what was the other one that Rhea was talking about?
Hockey.
Not sure about that. Although the Finnish women are predicted by some to get in the medals. Mm-hmm. So, but not sure about the men because you've got Canada and Russia and the Czech Republic, lots of good teams in there.
And they haven't done so well lately, so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a pretty good predictor that they might not do as well as they should be doing at the Olympics.
Well, send them a nasty note, Rhea. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you. Bye.
Ski jumping, Neil, which is so foreign to so many people. As we mentioned earlier, most people do know it from that wipeout at the beginning of Wide World of Sports.
Mm-hmm.
It's just incredibly dramatic. And I remember in the 1998 Olympics in Nagano seeing a crowd of, about 80,000 people at the bottom of the hill cheering for the Japanese jumpers. And, you think Cameron Indoor Stadium where the Dukies, where they root for the Duke basketball teams is insane. You would not believe this. I mean, that's the exciting thing about these games that for a lot of Americans, a lot of these are just bizarre sports. But all over the world, I mean, this is truly a global event, and people love these sports and get absolutely nutty about them.
Let's see if we get one more caller on. Let's go to Jody. Jody's with us from Boulder, Colorado.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We are going to be watching the women's downhill at this Olympics.
And why is that?
I have a 5-year-old daughter who's currently on her third session of skiing, and she loves skiing. And I think it would be great to show her these women as role models.
And she's been skiing how many times?
This is her third session.
And you do know that there's a little difference between the slope that she was on and the ones that the downhillers are going to be on in outside of Turin.
Yes, I do, but she currently is a little bit of a speed demon, even though she's only 5 years old, so I thought it might be appropriate for her to watch this.
Mm-hmm.
as excitement and maybe as a warning, Jody, you can tell your 5-year-old daughter, all right, honey, this is what you're aiming for if you want to race in a race where there aren't a lot of gates and you just point your skis down the hill.
Right, exactly. Her current goal is to get faster than her dad, so she's got her work cut out for her.
Well, Jody, we wish her and the women's ski team the best of luck.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate your phone call. And, Tom, I guess, again, it's something of a miracle to go through a whole segment on the Winter Olympics, and neither one of us has mentioned figure skating yet, which is going to get the highest rating of anything.
You bet. And a lot of people will be tuning in to see if Michelle Kwan, who just got in with a medical waiver, is going to be able to finally pull off the elusive gold medal winning performance. But, you know, or is she going to be undercut by another American teen like Tara Lipinski did, like Sarah Hughes did 4 years ago? Kimmy Meisner is one of the three skaters going, and she's 16, and she could certainly do it. Sasha Cohen is a great skater, and Irina Slutskaya, of course, of Russia, is a wonderful skater. So a lot of competition. We haven't even talked about the men.
Tom Goldman, I think a lot of people envy you your job. Of course, they don't know how little sleep you're going to be getting in the next couple of weeks.
Can I leave you? I've been working on my Italian. Can I leave you with one thing?
Of course.
Andiamo a riscaldarsi con una cioccolata calda di McDonald's. That means let's go warm up with some hot chocolate at McDonald's. That's one of the useful phrases listed in my McDonald's reporter's notebook.
Oh, amazing how that happened. Tom Goldman, thanks so much. Have a great time.
Thank you, Neil.
Tom Goldman, NPR sports correspondent, joined us from our facilities at the Winter Olympic Games.